I'm Robert Greaves, Vice Chairman of AmCham Hong Kong. We are delighted to have two world-renowned academics to speak at this year's China Conference as keynote speakers and to hear their insights on U.S.-China relations in the era of coopetition. Joining me now are Professor Stephen Roach, Senior Fellow at Yale's Jackson Institute of Global Affairs and Senior Lecturer at Yale School of Management, and Professor Min-Chin Pei, Tom and Margot Pritzker 72 Professor of Government and George Roberts Fellow and Director of the Keck Center for International and Strategic Studies at Claremont McKenna College. While political tensions between the U.S. and China threaten cooperation on global innovation and technological advances in the near term, the longer-term global trend is toward a world in which capital and talent flow to where the opportunities and markets are. That is one of the key takeaways of this year's conference, themed U.S. and China, Shaping the Future of Innovation and Technology. Steve, thanks very much for being with us today. What is your best guess for the U.S.-China tech rivalry?
I think this is one of the toughest challenges that the two nations face. The U.S. has alleged that China has been aggressive in illegal technology transfer, both through joint ventures as well as outbound M&A activity, and guilty of cyber hacking. China, on the other hand, feels that it needs to focus on innovation and technology to develop more of a self-reliant indigenous approach. And it's espoused two industrial policies, Made in China 2025 and the Artificial Intelligence 2030, to realize those goals. Those are core interests of China that it will not back down. The U.S. allegations are presumably core interests of the U.S. that it is not going to back down on either. So we're at a standstill, and there is no easy off-ramp for either nation.
The U.S. has been the leader in innovation and technology for decades, as you know. Is it possible we're at a tipping point where the U.S. will start to go into a slow but gradual decline because of its mindset vis-a-vis China and other competitors?
I think the U.S. still has a lot of fire in its belly in terms of innovation, entrepreneurial activity, and a huge head start with its Silicon Valley-like hubs. All over the. On the other hand, the U.S. has a chronic savings problem, and it's going to get worse with the tax cuts that were enacted last year. Without saving, it's going to be hard to stay the course on the investment, the venture funding that underpins innovation and entrepreneurial activity. I don't look for the U.S. to lose its hunger, its appetite to stay as a leading innovator, but China is coming on quick. And it's doing everything the U.S. did in terms of hubs and startups and venture, R&D spending, graduating 1.7 million scientists and engineers from its universities every year. So China is on track to close the gap. It's a gap that won't be closed for a long time, but the trajectory is there.
We talked, you talked in your remarks, and Min-Chin Pei talked in his remarks about the role of Hong Kong in this rivalry. And what do you think realistically is the most logical scenario for Hong Kong? What is the future for Hong Kong?
Hong Kong goes the way of China. If China is ensnared in a trade war with the U.S., whether Hong Kong likes it or not, it's going to be caught right in the crossfire. There is very little that Hong Kong can do autonomously to avoid crossfire. And while Hong Kong and its geographic proximity to the Pearl River Delta, the Greater Bay Area, is an important aspect of China's technology bet that will serve Hong Kong well and the rest of the region well in the years ahead, if the trade tensions intensify, Hong Kong will suffer as well.
There was a question on Slido during your remarks about, to the effect, will Google come back into China and how will it come back? And I have a larger question, which is, how are U.S. companies in China going to be treated, or how will they operate going forward in light of this rivalry?
Well, you know, Google tried it in China and they gave up, and they lost a lot of ground in their absence. And I think while there's rumors of them considering re-entering the Chinese market, it may be too little too late. And I think there's a lot of misgivings at the upper echelons of Google about a search engine with Chinese, filtered Chinese characteristics. But I think your broader question on trade war taking a toll on operating conditions for U.S. subsidiaries in China is a perfectly legitimate one. The U.S. presumes that China is powerless to address the trade tensions that it is imposing on China through its much larger tariffable trade flows. China's got lots of optionality, especially bringing pressure to bear on U.S. subsidiaries in China.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Professor Pei, we enjoyed your session today. I wanted to ask you a few questions. We were talking about the rivalry between China and the U.S. In technology and innovation. Realistically, where do you see it heading?
I think we are at the very beginning of a full-fledged rivalry. It depends where we're heading, depends on what each country does, because it's an interactive process. If U.S. does A, China will do B, which will lead to C, and then China will do D. So, in other words, we do not know the outcome, but we know that it's an interactive process. And where we are depends on threat perception by each side. Because how do you view one country's action? And that can really lead to very different outcomes. Let me just give you two examples, Huawei and ZTE. The ZTE outcome gives us some hope that a mutually acceptable solution can be found despite the context of strategic rivalry. Huawei, I'm not so sure. Because this is a case where the U.S. views Huawei as a much more serious strategic threat. And then it effectively drives Huawei out of the American market. And then some of American allies are following suit, Australia, for example, and Great Britain as well. And then China would do, I don't know what China has done in this particular case, but if I were in Beijing, I would do what I can to make sure that Huawei retains its technology edge. I hope that we end up with more ZTEs, that is essentially a cooperative, negotiated outcome rather than a Huawei-like situation, which means zero-sum, toe-to-toe.
One of the phrases, words that was not really addressed in your remarks this morning or in Steve Roach's remarks is cyber attacks.
Yeah.
So in the media, in the U.S. media, they talk about these days the trade war going on, and because of the trade war, Chinese cyber attacks, the theft of information from companies, particularly tech companies in the U.S., is on the increase. This leads to deep suspicion about China. What are your thoughts about that? What should be done? Should China back off? Does the U.S. do this as well? What is the solution to this problem?
Yeah, I think, again, there can be two solutions. One solution is to escalate. If the U.S.-China strategic rivalry and technological rivalry continues to escalate, then cyber attacks specifically for the purpose of obtaining commercial technology will go up. Because if China cannot obtain the technology through more normal legitimate means, the demand for it is there. And to the extent that they have the means of obtaining such technology, they will use the means.
So there'll be any means possible to make Made in China 2025 work and all of the other objectives that China has?
Oh yeah, not necessarily Made in China 2025, but the overall objective okay. is to obtain the technology through whatever means available to the Chinese.
Does this lead to the so-called Thucydides trap?
I think we're already in the Thucydides trap. We don't know whether we're in the bottom or not. We're falling into the Thucydides trap. How deep do we get into this trap? Again, is an interactive process.
Does this lead inevitably to military conflict?
Not necessarily military conflict, because in the age of nuclear weapons, adversaries in a Cold War-like situation actually think twice or three times about fighting each other directly.
Let me go then to, you talked about three scenarios in your remarks.
Yes.
That it's possible that China will either strike a grand bargain,
yes.
or a scenario of early capitulation, or a scenario until the bitter end. And which one do you think will realistically happen and why?
My response is probably I do not know. Based on history, great power rivalries all end up with the defeat of one of the combatants. So historical patterns tell us that most likely it will be till the bitter end. But human rationality also tells us that it is still possible to either get a grand bargain or an early solution with a lot of compromises made by the Chinese. Because China in this context is decidedly the weaker party. You cannot expect the stronger party to make more concessions than the weaker party.
So is it your expectation that China will at some point try to make concessions?
I think so. I think right now, if you talk about the trade war per se, China is very eager, very desperate even, to make concessions to end this thing. The problem is that the U.S., within the U.S., there are different voices. There's no agreement as to what to demand from China. Hmm. China, if you put some specific conditions on the table, then they can negotiate. You cannot put a document which essentially says it's unconditional surrender, permanent disarmament in terms of technology, industrial policy, without any reassurance that U.S. and China, on the whole, will strike a deal to ensure their peaceful cooperative relationship.
Great. And now, as I said earlier today, we are in Hong Kong and we have a Hong Kong audience. What is your best view of how Hong Kong will be affected in this trade war as time goes on?
As time goes on, Hong Kong will be very negatively affected. In the U.S., the position of Hong Kong is a very how the U.S. sees Hong Kong depends on what China does to Hong Kong. This is very different from the pre-1997 era. Pre-1997, the U.S. had absolutely no doubt about Hong Kong because the British were their allies. Today, all the U.S. has is a Chinese promise. And the history of the last 21 years of Hong Kong under Chinese rule raises enormous doubts about China's commitment to that, to its promise. So, in the technological area, I think, as I said today, there are very strong temptations in Beijing to take advantage of Hong Kong's unique status. My advice is don't do this, because you are not going to be successful and you end up hurting people.